Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello everyone, it is Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast, from me, Paul Machin, and this man right here, Mr. Christopher Pager.
Thank you very much. I'm Mr. Blood Red on Twitter, if you want to give us a follow.
Yeah, by all means. Some people actually prefer to know you by that name.
Apparently so.
Even your friends.
Apparently so.
Mention it, no name. Dickie Hawkins. Kickoff question this week comes from Natural Red, Natural_Red_LFC. If you had to pick one Liverpool player to be the best man at your wedding, who would it be and why?
James Milner.
Safe pair of hands.
Safe pair of hands, first and foremost. Uh-huh. Not going to run off with the wife.
Okay.
Second, not going to cost me a lot of money in alcohol. Just a bit of bottle of Ribena.
Oh, wow.
Sorted.
So I considered him for different reasons, and it was... Well, the safe pair of hands thing, because there's a balancing act with the best man. So I've been to a number of weddings and I've seen a number of best men. I've seen the archetypal best man, and it wasn't you, which I think the odds would have had stacked heavily in that favour of the guy who gets so drunk that he basically can't string three words together by the time he gets to a speech. I've seen that happen, and it's an absolute fucking car crash. So obviously there is that. So maybe you're looking for that, but in this instance, I'm not. No. You're looking for a guy who can get up, he's trustworthy, he's not going to say anything too blue. You know, you've got the grandparents and all that kind of stuff there. But he also is quite funny, but not like hilariously funny. So I think he's got the dad parent humour kind of thing down, which is all you really need at a wedding. You don't need Bill Hicks getting up and delivering a scathing assault on modern culture. You need someone to get up and make a few lowest common denominator gags and get out. And obviously, I also get the impression that he's the kind of guy who would remember to hit all the marks that you meant to hit in terms of who you thank and all that. Like, so I agree. I think James Milner would be a spectacularly good best man. Who would be the worst best man, do you think?
Dejan.
Wow. Why?
I just think he'd big you up to the point where you're just lying now, mate.
I can't deliver on these promises. Will you back in?
He's going to be the best husband in the world.
Dejan, I'm not. I'm not, honestly, I'm not. I'm going to be above average at very best.
By the end of this season, he'll have taken you to New York, the Champions League final. No. You'll have a Premier League in your back pocket.
Dejan, I can't even afford a caravan in Skegness, mate. Will you just wind it in? Like, you just... no, that's a good shout. It's a very, very good shout. Mignolet for me.
Yeah.
We dig Mignolet a lot on this podcast. I don't mean to. I've got no problem. Genuinely no problem with Mignolet.
Doesn't like kids.
No. What?
He doesn't like kids. He doesn't like my kid.
Mignolet doesn't like kids.
My kid.
Why doesn't he? What?
Well, when I was sat in Costa and we had the baby when Robin was young, me and Kat were there, we were having a nice coffee, and came and sat down. The baby whinged once, not even a big whinge, and he was like, we've got to get up and move somewhere else, and just move somewhere else. And that's why I've told you this many times.
Yeah, but it was a Mignolet story, so completely gone out of my head. Mignolet, because I've also been at weddings where speeches just go on and on and on. And I, you know, as much as like the boring Milner character, it's a character. That's how Mignolet is in interviews. Yeah. They call him the safest pair of hands in an interview sense. I've spoken to people, professionals.
Which is, you know, quite strange.
massively ironic. Because he just says nothing of interest generally. So it's like you get given Mignolet and the interviewers just go, I'm getting That's it. Brilliant. There you go. There's 20 minutes of my life I'm not getting back. So, yeah. Let us know who you would have as your best man. Maybe you're a different kind of personality. I think Bobby Firmino, if you're that kind of way inclined, would be a phenomenal best man to have.
Again, you don't...
Your stag do would be quality.
Yeah. But you don't really want to be, you know, shown up on the dance floor either by your best man. And you know, Bobby's going to really do that to you, isn't he?
Yeah. I don't know. We're pretty good dancers, Chris.
I thought so too. I think so too. Yeah, we used to have the dances.
We've
down.
Got tremendous natural rhythm. I'm just saying.
I think so too.
News: Oxlade-Chamberlain has been added to Liverpool's Champions League squad. To be expected, I guess, because we know he's well back on the fitness hunt. But another one of those, another piece of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain news that's put a smile on my face.
Hey, listen, and you know it's great, and he can play right wing back, which means he can play right back when we need him to.
Yes.
So sound.
Yeah, and who knows, that happens to happen. Like, players go out, we change formation, they end up playing in mad positions anyway. I'm not keen on this, like, it's all right because he can play right wing really well. Can he? Is he a brilliant right wing? I don't think he's as good a right wing as people remember, but...
I don't think he was good last season in the right wing. No, he got pushed there in games, didn't he? And I always felt like we're not seeing the best Oxlade-Chamberlain, never mind the best side, because of that.
But he is a better option there than most of the other options that we have at the club. It's better than Lallana.
That's fair.
Put Lallana on right wing.
I'd rather have Alex on the left than the right, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think, you know, especially the way that Mane's been playing it over the last sort of, let's say, 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, that cutting inside, getting into that number 10 position more from the left-hand side and stuff. I think that Ox could do that and excel. You know, I think the times when we used him on the right wing was more to get Salah up front last season.
Yeah.
I think we've already found a way of doing that.
Yeah.
Now, I think Shaqiri on one side, Ox on the other. Firmino, if you wanted to rest Mane, he's a decent shout.
Yeah, no, I think very, very good indeed. And again, another big boost going into the Champions League because we're going to talk about the West Ham game. We're going to talk about this blip that Liverpool are currently in. We're hoping it's a blip and not like a bloop, which is a slightly longer way of saying that. So what Bournemouth is. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk about all those things in due course. But yeah, we've been playing like one game a week. You know what I mean? And we've got a little run of less games. When the Champions League come back again, that's when the season really kicks on. And knowing that you've got the option to bring Chamberlain, even if he might not get a single minute of action in the Champions League this season because, you know, you're probably looking at, like, certainly quarters, more likely semis before you get him back to a real match useful fitness. So, but again, I love that there's a potential story being written there. Whether we'll get to see it, I really don't know. But, you know, given how heartbreaking it was to lose him in the quarterfinals, you think that we could well have a situation where he could come back into the team and be that extra impetus, I think, is it?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, he's a guy I think every Liverpool fan's just excited to see back in the side. And whether that's Champions League or Premier League, I'm not arsed either way. But when you, as you say there, when it comes back to two games a week, we'll need to use the squad. I think, you know, in some ways we've been very lucky this season in that when the squad has been stretched thin like it is now, has actually been the time when it's best for us to be stretched thin. I think if we'd have had this little blip in December, let's say, in dipping form with the injuries that we've got, that, you know, we could have been out the title race.
Yeah.
You know, never mind all this talk at the moment, like we're bottling on stuff, which I disagree with anyway, and I'm sure we'll talk about later. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is a big player and he'll be a big boost, but not only will it be a boost for the fans, it'll be a boost for the side because I think they've missed him.
Yeah. There's no side was made worse by having more talented, pacey players available to it. So yeah, more's the better. Paul Ince has compared Virgil van Dijk's impact to Man United signing Eric Cantona, which, I mean, initially you go, well, they play completely different positions, but the point he makes was when Cantona came in, he was this big fella, big stature, massive on quality, and the lift that he clearly elevated the quality of the side. And he goes on, he talks about how you could maybe say that about Alisson as well, but for him, van Dijk was the one that stood out. And I think it's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because it's not something I'd really thought about in that regard, but Cantona was the catalyst that changed Man United from being nearly men into being, you know, the dominant force in England.
Yeah, Van Dijk certainly got that about him. It's probably too early to say right now, isn't it? I think, you know, we need to put some silverware on the sideboard as a former man would actually say, thinking about it. He's certainly got that, and he's got that mad ability that only certain players have of making everybody else better.
Mm-hmm.
And Cantona did that. Cantona did that through his play, did it through injecting confidence into the players that he played with. Van Dijk has that in bucket loads, you know what I mean? And I think we will talk about him as being one of the all-time best signings Liverpool have ever had. And Liverpool have had some great signings over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I realised it last night when we were watching the West Ham United game. Not loads of nice things about that game, but it was brought when Andy Carroll's brought onto the pitch and thought, he formerly Liverpool's record signing. He held that for quite a while. And the fact that it's like now dwarfed by Virgil van Dijk. And it tells you how far we've come. And that's the level that we're at now, that we're spending big money. We're spending big money well, and we're buying players. Virgil van Dijk is a pure Man United player. He's like, you know, that Man United used to go out and buy whatever it took to make them winners. There was no, here's the model by which all of our signings need to conform. There might have been a general overarching model, but if they needed to go and get a footballer, they went and got that footballer, and you know, no questions asked. And sometimes it was mistake. They made a mistake. You know, you got your Juan Verones for every Eric Cantona, but you know, that he's of that elite quality that we haven't seen as Liverpool do that really in our time as
no. I think being fans. I can think of, you know, Rio Ferdinand sticks out as a centre back in a similar mould, and he'd not long had a big money move to Leeds at the time as well, and I think he was the world record defender time. And then obviously for Manchester United as well. Then you think of players like Jaap Stam but other older players like Van Persie, who came in and essentially handed them the title because of the goals that he scored. It didn't matter to them that he was 29 approaching 30 and he was from a rival. That would be like, nah, Liverpool wouldn't do that. And I still don't think they'd do that now either, to be honest with you. But Van Dijk certainly is. It's a guy that we waited for, a guy that we knew we were going to have to spend a lot of money on, but a guy ultimately that we trusted to make everybody better, and he's delivering right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Liverpool have been linked with a 60 million-ish bid for Lorenzo Insigne. This comes by, I did this on the news show this week, but it comes by a Sport Witness via some other gang of idiots. This seems highly unlikely to me, but you know, he's, you know, we talk about buying ready-made players and a big value and all that. I think he's got a 140-something release clause, which Liverpool are never going to meet for that. I think he's 27 years old. But he's got the goal return. He can play across the front three. In a world where he, you know, again, if he wasn't a dad-in-the-wall Napoli boy, that, this feels like a very un-Liverpool sign, but equally we've just talked about how Liverpool have gone out and spent big money on ready-made players when it needs to be. We would be a much better squad for having a Lorenzo and
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't feel like something that Liverpool do. I always get a little bit nervous about signing Italian forwards, and I think you're the same. I think we've seen so many come over, and not just Italian, people who've played in the Italian league. Like Shevchenko wasn't the same player. Admittedly, he was much older when he came across and stuff like that. So I always get a little bit nervous about that, and I don't really like to see players linked, but he's a good player. He's clearly a top draw player.
He's on course for like 20 goals this season, you know, predominantly as a forward, as opposed to, he's not like a lead the line centre forward kind of thing. Like, so his numbers are there. You know, we always used to say, we used to make a big deal about getting 10 goals in Serie A being a good return. He's going to do a lot better. He's going to be able to do a lot better than that. He's got quality. We've seen it firsthand. But you're right, I'm the same on that. I think it takes the pace difference between the leagues is staggering, and it always has been. It's very rare, and I can't think of many examples off the top of my head, and maybe people will be able to correct me in the comments. I mean, I know Higuain's just hit the ground running, but we'll see how long he's able to run for, given that wonderful physique of his. We do see, it's not like Serie A forwards don't score goals or anything. Viali had a decent enough career, etc. Zola's probably the prime example of someone whose career actually went up. I'm not sure he still had a continue to have an elite level career from joining from Serie A, but not
Ravanelli,
not many.
Ravanelli did it, in a crap side as well.
To
be fair to him, like other than that, for every Ravanelli, there's 10 Mutus and Marattas and stuff that just don't seem to have worked out, and there are loads of them. The thing that interests me and why actually I think sometimes it might suit Liverpool to go for that type of a player now, and why it probably never suited us in the past, because I think the way that we played, let's say just compared last season to this season, and the way that we were more quick counter-attacking last season, now we're very much, it's about movement and finding space. That's one thing that Italian strikers do incredibly well. You know, it's one thing that I think Harry Kane does really well. I think a team that dominates possession like that can actually get a tune out of a lad who is just very good at making good runs, and you might not need that pace. And I wonder if we are linked with somebody like that, I wonder if that's why.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a very, very interesting thought indeed. Sammy Hippier has signed up for the Liverpool Legends, the upcoming Milan Legends game at Anfield. Fine, absolutely fine. I mean, did this Hippier returns to Liverpool headline, and I thought this is a News Now special here, and then no, it turned out it was actually the headline that they'd use on the official Liverpool website. You're not the Echo, LiverpoolFC.com, and you're not Read Liverpool FC. Back it in. Yeah, great. I mean, it'd be good to see Sammy in action again, of course, but no shock here. I mean, I thought, part of me was like, he's coming back to the coaching staff. Absolutely fantastic. So I actually was I was more disappointed with this news than I was made up, unfortunately. But nevertheless. Right, Steve, of the wonderful readliverpoolfc.com, we'll be in doing the Reds News Roundup show on Wednesday this week. We're actually over watching the Legends train ahead of this game, and then Steve will be in to record a show afterwards. So we'll be talking about this stuff in a bit more depth and detail, probably analysing what went right and wrong in the transfer window, and then giving up to all kinds of other wonderful shenanigans. So get on the redmentv.com for that one. Okay, Chris, West Ham, we've talked around it long enough. I woke up Tuesday morning, and I'll be perfectly honest, I could have swerved this entire week. Just, my head wasn't in the right place over all the Liverpool stuff, to be honest. I did my match reactions, and I had a reasonable handle. I didn't feel too bad with it, but the weight of all the stuff around it is doing my head in at the moment, and I'm not sure that it should be as much as it is.
No, it shouldn't. But it's because you want it. Oh. It's because we all want it so bad, and we live in a world, and we often talk about 24-hour news cycles and stuff. And I was talking about this to someone on Sunday, actually, and it was an Everton fan that I'd met for the first time, Michael Bell, FIFA gamer. And I was talking to him, and I was explaining like how Barry and Ped are feeling about Everton and stuff at the moment. And I think a lot of teams feel, and fan bases feel a bit like this at this time of the year. A lot of fan bases are not as fortunate as we are, and the season's over, and Everton's one of them. And you know, you can talk about name 10 clubs in the league that the season's over or only going to get worse. I mean, and they could go down and stuff. And one of the things that I thought about was like this patience and having the ability to be able to ride it out. And so let's talk about Everton for a minute, if you don't mind. And like, they clearly need a manager to be in situ with a director of football for maybe 3 years, 4 years, and they need to ride that out, because I think they've changed manager, what, 4 times in the last few years, something like that. They've had Walsh there last year as the director of football. They've got Brands trying to sort out Walsh's errors. Walsh was probably trying to sort out somebody else's errors. And Liverpool have had that stability for a few years now, since we got Jurgen Klopp in, and Edwards is starting to do a good job, and I think everybody's recognising that. And I'll bring it back to the 24-hour news cycle. When you're playing one game a week and you're getting beat every weekend, or you're drawing like we did this week, everybody is so used to filling their life with stuff that they care about now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things for me is, and a lot of Liverpool fans, they just care about Liverpool Football Club. Yeah. You read everything, you watch everything, you listen to everything. Mm-hmm. That's a big 7 days to fill the void.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that you'd get a couple of pages on the back of the Echo, 3 pages maybe a day, and that'd be it. Yeah. Maybe 3 articles for, and then the next day, and then you get the pink on the Saturday, and you'd read it all. I do probably what I used to read about Liverpool in an hour or two in the morning now.
Yeah.
And then I'm listening and watching and all this type of stuff. So it's kind of extended the gap between games in my head.
Yeah.
So that everything just moves so slowly. So when you get a draw and you talk about it for 3 days and you're analysing it for 3 days, by the time you start previewing the next game, you're done.
Yeah.
You're like, I can't. We only drew one game yet. I've thought about it for the last 72 hours straight.
Yeah. I think what exacerbates all of this, and it's a shift in culture as well. We got a question, and I was going to save this for the end, but I think it fits in here, from Jason Mundcourt on Twitter. He said, do you consider it fair for older fans to get annoyed at younger fans for not being patient enough when they've never seen the team lift silverware? And I think that's an issue. That's a thing. I'll try and come back to that. But again, so when we were growing up watching football, you didn't interact with fans of other teams. You didn't know fans from other teams. You knew some Evertonians. You know, that was it. And to be, I'll be perfectly honest, I got asked this question the other day in an interview. There was like one Evertonian in my junior school of like 300 kids or something. There was like one Evertonian, and he was weird. So, you know, you didn't really have any interaction. You wouldn't speak to him anyway, so you wouldn't have any interaction with Evertonians at all for the first 11 years of my life, pretty much. I didn't even speak to an Evertonian. So when but then you'd have them, you exist with them. And it wasn't really then until I went to uni that I actually met face-to-face fans of other footy teams. Periodically, you'd meet one or two, but it'd be in the context of your own city, so people wouldn't come in and be bellends. You know, working behind bars, I met like people, met a couple of Villa fans and a couple of bits and pieces and what have you. But even then, face-to-face, all the conversations I largely had with fans of other football club were all positive, because you were face-to-face, you shared your love of...
Face-to-face is different as well.
I went to uni, and that was our shared bond from across the country, no matter where you came from. That was your shared bond. Your shared bond was footy. It always happens at random parties. You'd end up in a group of fellas talking about football. And the problem is now is that... that you used to kind of respect. It was fascinating to get other people's opinions, because you didn't have an opinion on their football club, because you never think about their football club. Why would you?
You'd watch it on Match of the Day. There wasn't as many games on the TV
or
anything.
You knew they're good players, and you could say to them, God, how good is such and such that you've got? You wouldn't be like, shit, or you wouldn't have anything bad to say about their club, apart from your rivals, maybe, where you would dig a little bit deeper, of course. But now you're constantly exposed to these things, and being constantly exposed to other fan bases constantly exposes the delusion behind your own support, because we can't all be by far the greatest team the world's ever seen, you know, and yet we all sing, every single football club sings it, you know what I mean? And I think that's a massive weight on a younger generation of fans these days, is that, and I feel it too, and I'm 36 years old, and that's what's turning me off it at the moment, is because the negativity, whether it's from our own fans or from outside, or mainly our fans being wound up by a lot of this outside pressure, is weighing me down, and that's why I feel massively. But to kind of start to answer Jason's question here, I get annoyed by younger fans not being patient if they're being guided by older fans. Like, it's like, because if I turn around to my dad and talked about the stress prior to West Ham, by the way, and he kind of was like, what are you talking about, Paul? We're top of the league. We've only lost one game this season. And it wasn't even a debate or a long conversation. That was full stop, done. And I was like, God, he's right. What am I whinging about? And that, you know what I mean? That helped to calm me down, at least until the West Ham game.
There's another thing at play here. They're different generations, and generations of people are different. Mm. So, for example, I can pretty much guarantee you that my great-great-great-granddad was a racist. Right? No? I think that's probably fair to say.
Okay.
That's what those people of that generation would say. I'm not saying he was like...
I mean, you've just totally thrown your great-great-granddad under the bus there, mate.
Well, I've never met him, so it's fine. But, you know, you meet people in your life who are older than you who'd say things, and you're like, you can't say that, you know what I mean? And people have said stuff like that I think everybody's heard.
I do that to you every week.
True. but then... you're getting annoyed at the younger generation for being less patient. I think they naturally are, because of all the things that they have grown up with.
Yeah.
Their attention span is shorter than ours.
Yeah.
And so can you get annoyed at your great-great-great-great-great-great-granddad for something that was built into his life socially because of where he grew up, how he grew up and all this type of stuff? And can you get annoyed at a young person for being less patient than you are when it's scientifically proven that they don't have that?
Yeah. No, it's a very good point. It is a very good point. I think there's a happy balance in this, so much as if it's in the here and now, things can be affected. I think is the pulling it back to some extent on that one, because you're right. People do have a shorter attention span, and people are so used to this. This is their game. There's no football for old men, unfortunately. Like, you know what I mean? That's the way it goes. Everyone always thinks the generation before them was so much better and so much cooler. Whereas when you were in it, it wasn't really. It was just what it was. You know, there's people now who are losing their heads over it. Can't even begin to fathom how much people who are half your age are going to do your head in. In 15 to 20 years' time, and I won't even be able to go near it. Football will not be even recognisable to me probably at that point. So I think that's all part and parcel of this thing, though. That a lot of what I've been saying today in a couple of different places is patience is, I think, patience is a virtue, but it's a league season. You can't not have patience because it starts in August and it ends in May. So if it was a race, you wouldn't judge a race. You know, it was like you're watching 100 metres, you wouldn't necessarily judge, well, I mean, it's over a lot quicker, but you wouldn't judge a race necessarily by the middle unless you were clearly and utterly, unless you fell over as you were starting. Provided you're still in it, you're still in it, that kind of thing. And I think because football, you're right, because of this news cycle and because it's so constant, and because we are being told to judge football this way, people are judging it this way. And
just think of Sky.
Yeah.
You know, they're constantly promoting the next big game.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a never-ending cycle of this is the biggest game you've ever been to. This is the biggest game we've ever had on Sky. And then as soon as you're in the middle of that game, the game's not even over and they're telling you that the biggest game on Sky is next weekend.
But it's not even that, because the games always go on. It's the upselling of it, and they have to make the stories. They have to dramatize it. They have to make it like the wrestling,
because
they have to make you want to tune in to find out what happens in the next part. What's the story? Well, it's far more interesting that Liverpool are in the middle of a crisis, that Liverpool are throwing it away, than. Sorry, Liverpool just lost. Not even lost, by the way. Liverpool just drew a couple of games against sides that we've lost to in the past. And we've drawn against in the past, and we've beaten in the past. There's no wider footballing interest in that, because that's not their wider job is to stoke every fucker up. Whereas within a Liverpool, and I'm not. I think I'm probably less wound up by that because I can appreciate that.
Because you've had 20 years.
Well, yeah. But it's all. But what I'm not. What I think is what I'm finding hard is how that's pervading into the mentalities of our fan base. Sometimes I think we're being too affected by it, and I get it. We're susceptible. Because this means so much. This means so much to us this season that everything feels like it's on a knife edge. But did you see that Andy Robertson post-match interview?
No.
It's on our Twitter account anyway. I recommend people go and have a look. But he just said, like, it's a blip. You know, we've got to get back on it, but we've got to enjoy it. There's a lot of teams who'd like to be in our position. Us included, by the way. Us included. I think we lose sight of that because I think there's a temptation because we've got this, got to have it now. Things can be undone. You can now delete your text. You know, if you sent a text message, it was gone and you had to deal with the fucking consequences. You'd said something unconscionable or something stupid. Now you can delete them. You can pull them back from the ether on like WhatsApp and what have you. People feel that things can be undone or go to recriminations about making changes. What could have done? What could have been done differently? There's a degree to which that's useful in analysis and in you know and being able to look back on things and, you know as a whole you know analysing a match or analysing a spell against or a season or what have you. But there's times when it's just absolutely empty noise. It's just you're a big fan of like Twitter like the screaming into the abyss kind of thing, like you know the narcissistic
echo chamber.
It serves no great purpose. Liverpool have missed out on a couple of opportunities to massively extend the lead. Man City did it too.
Right, listen to this. So this is a tweet I retweeted from a massive red called Steve Davis. And I've actually used this on a show on the website. Perception's a funny thing in football, isn't it? In the last 10 games, City have dropped 12 points and we've dropped 7. City have lost to 3 of the teams outside the top 6. We've drawn against 2 of them. Yet Liverpool are perceived as the ones bottling it and blowing it. It's unquestionable that our performances have dropped off since 2019 started, but there's always going to be bad spells in a season. If, and it's a big if, we can play ourselves back into form quickly, we're still in a great position. We'll drop points, City will do too, undoubtedly. In the last 2 games, if the last 2 games were dotted across the season and the league looked as it does now, nobody would be flinching.
Yeah.
But perception and performances magnify the nerves. Let's get to Anfield on Saturday. No nerves in the sand. Let's be confident. Hope that transfers to the pitch. A good solid win on Saturday, especially if City drop points in the next 2 games and that perception can change again. This was never going to be easy. We're Liverpool and we never do it the easy way. But that doesn't mean we don't ever do it. Keep the faith, Reds. And it's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because just look how many wins we've had
yeah.
and how many draws and how yeah. many losses. You know,
it shouldn't
just it's that simple. It's a 38-game season.
Yeah.
Now, if we capitulate.
Yeah.
You know what? That's fine.
We'll deal with that when we get there.
Yeah. We haven't capitulated. Yeah. We've drawn 2 games of football back-to-back
yeah.
when we've had an injury crisis, when we've not been at our best, and when, crucially, I think a few players that played even have been playing ill.
Yeah, yeah,
James
absolutely.
Milner played ill.
Yeah, exactly. Van Dijk's just come back. That was a makeshift side, and it's not my job to overanalyze West Ham because they've had injury problems or two. That's absolutely fair to say as well. But you know, in terms of when those games, I think I said this on the final word, when it's easier to set up a second string team to defend for your lives. And I'm not saying they totally did that because they did cause us problems going the other way. But largely, they got a lot of men behind the ball and they defended pretty resolutely. To be the team where the onus is on you, the more you strip away first team footballers and the more you strip away that cohesion of having played games together, the less quality you're going to have on the pitch. That's an absolute fact. It's not compatible in that regard, because in order for us to play the brand of football that we need to play to be an elite team, you've got to have as many of your good players playing together on the pitch as possible. So I think what was encouraging for me just on the game, Chris, I think Adam Lallana, he was up there to be, I mean, he has been the scapegoat for a while, but he was up there to be public enemy number one the second that team news came out, because he's the player in the squad that I think everyone perceives as being the weak link pretty much. I thought he had a good game. I thought, you know, the build up to the first goal, albeit he passes it to an offside Milner, not his fault. I think it's good to see no one really asked about Lallana today. I think it showed that, I'm not sure how many games he's going to play, how many minutes he's going to get, but it showed that he's not, like, we knew this, we know this, because he's been good for us before. He's a good footballer there, and he it made me feel a bit more relaxed about situations where if we do need to use Adam Lallana, he knows that he's still got it, and we know that he's still got it.
Listen, he's not started many games at all.
So his first start since, like, October or something?
So you're talking about judging a player on one start after... How long has he not been playing for Liverpool for? Really?
2 years.
Right. So a player comes back in after a two-year break and puts in a performance like that, and you're like, okay, that's not his finished product when he's match fit, Adam Lallana performance. Yeah. That's him coming back off nearly 2 years of not playing football and putting in a good, decent performance. I don't think he was great. I don't think he set the world alight. But as a starting point for a player who's not played... Yeah, you can build on that. Yeah. Absolutely, you can build on that.
It comes back to all these things. Like, Keita's a similar one for me. I don't think he had a great game. I think some people think he was boss and some people think he was terrible. And you tend to have these, like, this is where arguments go. I put the tweet out before. I said the people on Twitter are either Tiggers or Eeyores, aren't they? You're either super, super, super positive or you're just utterly miserable. And often things exist somewhere in between that. And, like, Keita, I thought, showed more spells of what he can actually do in this game than I think he has done in other games. But he threw through long spells and I thought, oh God, he's having a bit of a bad game. And
for me, it was as simple as he played at a 5 first half and he played at a 7 second half, and he split them a difference and gave him a 6. Am I shaking the table?
I'm like,
I can't help it, man. I
always
do it.
Like, hey.
You know what? Players don't have to be 10s or 1s. There is a difference. And, you know, I thought Bobby Firmino had a good first half. I thought he was shit second half.
Yeah.
It's just the way that it goes sometimes. Yeah. And Naby Keita, for me, showcased what he can bring to us. The big difference for me over the West Ham game, and I wasn't on the final word, so I've not really spoken to you about it. I think we're missing Trent more than anything. Mm. To be honest with you, I think that creativity from that right-hand side that Trent offers us, that outlet, that ability to get up and down the wing all the time, that's what we're missing at the moment. And I looked at it actually for the Stats and Tactics show, Paul, and I analysed it and I looked back at some of what Trent was doing earlier on in the season and what James Milner was doing. And what I found really interesting is the stats disagreed with me.
Yeah,
I pulled a game where Trent played against Brighton in his last game against this one. Milner's comes out better on the stats. Mm-hmm. So I looked at the tape and the film as well, and I thought James Milner did an outstanding...
You didn't need of those things. You need to look at tape, not film.
I streamed it. and then I looked at James Milner and his performance on the whole, and I'll tell you this, for the first 60 minutes, he was doing everything that Trent Alexander-Arnold does.
Yeah.
The issue was... And I only found out after I'd recorded this that he was ill, or right at the end, actually, Tom told me, is that... He tired badly.
Yeah.
And that's a guy who's nearly 32, is he? Mm. 31, 32 years old, getting compared to a 19, 20-year-old, doing a job that he's not supposed to be doing. So, of course, Trent's going to be fitter. Yeah. Of course, Trent's going to be able to do that, especially when James Milner's ill.
But the thing for me, because I don't know what Sean mentioned on, there's always got to be something that's the thing. In fact, it was the final word, Sean, I said, now, 2 months ago, it was Buvac. It was not having Buvac was the reason why we weren't great.
Not having Buvac is the reason we were top of the league.
Yeah, shit, and the reason why we're shit now, He's top of the league. Lost one league game this season. It's Klein. Now, no, but people, I've seen people go,
we can't talk this through.
I know, but the Milner stuff's interesting because you're absolutely fucking spot on. James Milner playing in that game last night was not the reason why Liverpool didn't win the game, because James Milner was doing the stuff that you're meant to do as a Liverpool right back. I saw James Milner crossing the halfway line, I saw him getting the ball out wide, I saw him overloading, overlapping and getting crosses into the box. I'm simplifying it, but that's the fundamentals of that. And he's much better in those positions than Nathaniel Klein is in his wildest dreams. We didn't need a Nathaniel Klein right back in that game. We didn't. We might need one at Old Trafford, and that's a different, you know, let's cross that bridge when we get there, of course. We might need one away in Munich. You know what I mean? We've made that decision. That's our cross to bear. There's no point crying about it because it's all these things. Milner's an absolutely fine deputy, but there has to be something, doesn't there? Why does it always have to be an individual player or it's a decision? I think people forget how complicated a game football is. I know Shankleyism is like just a bunch of fellas walking around kicking a ball, whatever. Yeah, it is, but there's a lot more to it these days than that, of course. And I think that the reason why Liverpool didn't win that game was, and you touched upon it before, Virgil van Dijk's still recovering from illness, so he's not fully fit, and he's absolutely pivotal to how we defend. Joel Matip is not that good. He's fine. He's an absolutely fine deputy. You can get away with having one of our...
He's our 4-2 centre-half.
Exactly. You can get away with having one of them, I think, maybe two, in the right circumstances against the right opponents, of lads who are third choice or below. And of our back four, we had a 4-choice centre-half and our third-choice right-back, and then our midfield three, who'd never played together.
And a front three, you've not played with that midfield three.
Exactly.
And I actually think the front three played completely differently to how we saw them play last year as well. Mm. You know, I felt Firmino was playing much more of the role that he's been playing. And I think he was dropping vertically more than the horizontal movements that he used to make last season. And I wondered whether that was a conscious thing or whether that was just him sort of being used to how he's been playing this season. People will harp back for the days of last season when we were snotting teams. I'll harp back to 3 months ago when we won 8 games in December, you know what I mean? When we hardly conceded a goal. And this season, people seem to have forgotten, was built on the defence.
Yeah.
And the defence is worth hurting right now,
unfortunately.
This season hasn't been built on the attack, scoring 7 goals in a game of football. Hasn't happened this season. Happened last season a couple of times.
Yeah.
We're a different side now to we are then, but we weren't anywhere near top of the table last season.
Yeah.
And we had a good run in the Champions League. We're having a good run in the Champions League. And I may be proved wrong. We might get knocked out in the next stage. But I tell you what, would I swap last season for this season? If you asked me to do it again? At the points we were in that season?
Yeah.
No. I'll take this season all day.
Yeah.
Because we're top of the frigging table, boy.
Yeah.
And because we're still in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And we were probably fifth or fourth last season at this point,
yeah,
with no chance of a Premier League title.
Last year we were nowhere near the league.
Yeah, people enjoyed it loads more.
Yeah, but we had Porto on the horizon, and we all thought that's going to be a really, really tough game. And none of us had expectations to get much further than the round of 16. It would have been a night. We said, get out if you can get past the 16. Enjoy every game that comes. So you wouldn't have gambled. You know, at this point, you'd have swapped this all day, every day. And at this point now, we're top of the league and we've got Bayern Munich and we think we can beat them. That's a difference 12 months makes. We feel like we're better. And whether it's true or not, it's completely fucking irrelevant, because that'll be what it'll be. That's completely out of our hands. That's the difference. That's the levels we've reached. And again, contextually, I think people forget that. But we always do. We always do this, by the way. This isn't necessarily a modern symptom. In 2008, 2009, we drew with West Ham at Anfield, went top of the league and got booed off the pitch because some of our fans are fucking knobheads. And that's not to do with whether you're online, offline, or fucking Scouse or being Singaporean. It doesn't fucking matter. People losing their heads over football will happen all day long. I actually just done a video. It's going out on my channel a bit more about this and the psychology behind all this stuff. But this is the thing. When you're fanatic of something, when you're so emotionally invested, you're not in control. It's hard to control your emotions in the moment. The trick is not to try and control your emotions in the moment, but it is what you do with that and how you react after the fact when you've had a chance to calm down, when you've had a chance to have a deep breath. You know, those comments that you've put out when you've gone out and insulted people online, fellow Liverpool fans, do you leave them there? Or do you delete them? Do you go and say sorry to people you've been an arsehole to? Or do you leave it because you might think nothing of it, you're over it, but you've said something horrible, you might have said something really horrible that's really been hurtful to someone who's actually only just being nice or is actually trying to do a good thing or spread a positive thing. So I think people need to a little bit more mindful in and of themselves and how they react to these things, not necessarily in the moment because that, you know, you and I, you're an in-the-moment kind of guy and I'm, you know, I'm the kind of opposite. That's who you are. I wouldn't turn you and go, stop being, you can't switch, turn a switch off genetically inside you that makes you a different person. Not embrace who you are, but, you know, in the cold light of day, we all need to take a big deep breath, I think, around this and enjoy what we've achieved so far. Bournemouth up next then. But before we do, the Around the League podcast recorded this week. Very special guest, Barry Cass from Toffee TV, was in chatting about Everton's plights, which, look, schadenfreude, I've gone on a lot about this, getting the misery from other, getting happiness from other people's misery. I'm not mad on it, but I do like it at times. So yeah, if you need a little bit of a lift, it could be worse. You could be an Evertonian.
So is there a bit of restlessness within the fans already with the manager? Yeah. Is there? And does that not, for you, having set the example almost with Moyes for all those years of, you know, this is what happens when you have faith in a manager and a philosophy and you put everything into that and you can get results out of that. From your perspective, to see the fan base now be waning on a manager after five, six months, does that, how do you feel about, Phil, for starters, what's your view on Silva?
See, I like him, right? Because I think, and I don't know why I like him, if that makes sense. I don't know whether it's the idea of what if we sack him, what do we have? Yeah. How often do you keep shopping and changing managers?
And you waited so long for him as well, went through all the debacle of not having.
I don't know whether we were waiting so long for him, the owner was waiting so long for him, right? But I don't know whether it's, some people would cut him now and go, he's not done enough, off you go. But how do you then ever build anything and who gets time? How do you judge whether you get time?
Brilliant. Yeah, get on to the RedmenTV.com. The Around the League podcast happens every single week. The lads are really up in it of late. Obviously, they're talking to other clubs around the league, the wider stories that aren't necessarily Liverpool stuff that may have a knock-on effect down the line, and they're trying to get more and more guests in. So, as I say, it starts off with Toffee TV this week, and there'll be a few more to come in the coming weeks. Sign up. First month is absolutely free, and then it's just £5 a month thereafter.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
As well as a whole host of other amazing content. Chris, City will probably be top by the time we get to Bournemouth because Everton, as we've heard, are fucking shit.
Yeah, it's about as standard as it's what I expect to happen, mm-hmm. to be honest with you.
If you're a gambling person, you're going to be very, very disappointed.
Yeah, you will be. And I think if you watch it, you'll be disappointed as well, to be honest with you. I think best thing to do is watch just Liverpool games. I think, you know, I decided the Newcastle game, I didn't even watch a minute of it. And I knew Newcastle were winning the game. Mm-hmm. And I still didn't turn on because, you know what? When it's not my team, the results will be the results.
Yeah.
And and I'll find out about the same time as yous.
Yeah.
Maybe a minute later when I get a notification about it or something anyway. I can't get any enjoyment out of watching City be good against teams. It just makes my enjoyment of Liverpool worse almost.
This week shows you exactly why you're dead right on that, because I turned on for the last 5 minutes of City Newcastle and it was great. It was I had a good little laugh. But if that had gone tits up, I'd have ruined my night with that. And equally, what it's shown is that there's just no point getting too excited about that stuff, because even if Everton pulls something off, and by the way, it's so unlikely. Evertonians are so desperate to cost us a league title here that I think they're desperate for their side to actually lose this game. Not all of them, by the way, but you know, I think they could happily. They would. A few of them would. Low key would take a defeat. It would be dead Everton for that to not happen and for them to somehow pull out the result of their absolute season to help gift us the title. But the thing about all this is that, as we've just seen, those individual results, it doesn't matter too much. It's kind of what Jürgen Klopp was driving at the other week when he was asked about the Kyle Walker tweeting about Liverpool not going 7 points or whatever it was. And he said, like, I try not to take too much about other teams' things, because, again, it doesn't matter, because we might lose the next game, or they might win, or they might lose. There's nothing definitive. So take some smiles, enjoy the league table, enjoy that kind of stuff. Like, but there's just no point getting too riled up by it all.
Listen, there's still a long way to go. And if you're watching Man City games, you've got twice as many games to watch. Mm. It's going to extend it even more. Honest to goodness, like, it's hard enough just being a Liverpool fan and dealing with it. Like,
the trick is probably just to be on Facebook constantly, because if there's one thing that is a black hole for time, I've discovered. It's just checking things, like, just check things that don't have football on. There's a good thing. Find some social media platforms that don't have football results on, and that's how you should pass the time very, very quickly. You're right on that. The only time we should really give a fuck about a Man City result is if it's last game of the season and we need them to, something negative to happen to them to be a good thing for us. That's when you can go ape shit. That's when you can start jumping up and down and dancing and singing. That's when you, if you really want to, send loads of ha ha ha's via Twitter to people.
Fuck that! Like, last game of the season. If they need to lose for us to win the title, I'll organise a fucking coach greeting at whatever ground they're at. We'll just go down en masse, every Liverpool fan, and scare the shit out of them again.
Yeah. I'm all for that.
We should just start doing it now, actually.
Yeah, just start harassing Man City.
get him
right. Just have a little sip. Just watch them all flinch. Watch Pep flinch on the front row. it's going to be... Chris, it's going to be a very stressful couple of weeks, I feel. So batten down the hatches a little bit on this one, because this game midweek is their rearranged fixture from the League Cup final, isn't it? So that
when we play United
forward
on the same day.
So we play first this weekend. It won't feel that way because they'll have the game in hand. So I think there's a lot of people who are. We're going to get a false. The league table's going to lie a little bit for the next couple of weeks until we have
that settles
level
almost.
On, we go level
it's going to be
again.
It's going to be difficult, but in some instances, I think it might work in our favour in some ways. In that, I know that Manchester City will be top of the table and stuff like that. Maybe people will just start talking about them a little bit more.
That's,
you know,
a possibility,
what I mean?
Isn't it?
And then it's back onto Liverpool of the underdog again, because Manchester City are top. Now, the game in hand, of course, being against United, is going to be tough in the way that they're playing and how they're playing and how they're creating chances and stuff. But I'm not too arsed, because I don't think I've ever felt like there wouldn't be a lead change again this season. And I think if you think Liverpool were going to steamroll the league and win by 7 to 10 points this season, you're probably feeling it worse than me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't expect that to happen. I expected Liverpool to drop points. I expect City to drop points. I expect one to go ahead of the other and then another. And it really is going to be down
to
the last
it's a generational
games.
Thing? Like, all the oldies who used to lead titles are like, no, expect us to win this by 7 points. Our generation is the generation that watched Liverpool win things in the hardest way possible. Yeah. That middle Premier League generation. And then there's a younger generation who've seen us bottle everything, basically, and get close and then fuck it all up. So that, maybe that's where all these differences in matter. You're dead right. I expect this to go to the fucking wire. If Liverpool don't win it in almost exactly the same way that City won it for the first time.
Salah!
Yeah, absolutely. Divock Origi with the assist. I can only perceive that's how Liverpool.
If they're we're going to win a title, that's how we're going to win our first Premier League title.
Exactly. In the most horrendous, stressful way, and ultimately delirious way possible.
Is there any ex Liverpool managers like a Roy Hodgson playing City towards the end, like we could replicate the Blackburn thing?
Possibly. It's an interesting thing. We could probably check that.
Yeah.
Go on him.
No.
No. I can't see this end being anything other than a massive stress. You're dead right in that regard. The good thing that we've kind of got going for us, potentially anyway, because all
best defence in the league, second best attack in the league, more points than everybody else.
You know what? I hadn't even thought about those. You know, other than that, if you wanted to get back into a situation where Liverpool are, you know, you wanted to pick a team, Bournemouth are from the clutch of teams that I wouldn't mind us playing at Anfield. You know, it's a decent footballing side coming to Anfield. Yeah, they might, even if they try and park the bus, you know, that it's one of those things. It's not. I'd hate to have Man United at Anfield on the back of this, or I'd hate to have Everton off the back of this. Or
yeah, I agree. I think Bournemouth are one of those sides that we've done well against, but then I actually thought West Ham was a good game for us off the back of the Leicester one.
Yeah, true enough.
You know what I mean? And Pellegrini and the way that we've handled them and the way that we've scored so many goals against West Ham. The pressure does things to title races, and I know the players say that, you know, they have to focus on each game, and they do, and they absolutely do focus on each and every game.
A damn sight better than we do, I imagine.
A damn sight better. They have to, otherwise they wouldn't be getting out of bed and going to training in the morning. They'd just be lying there looking at the ceiling going, please, I hope City lose tonight.
Yeah, eating cocoa pops. Yeah, just shaking.
But I truly believe that the pressure does make a massive, massive difference in these run-ins and stuff. And, you know, it will be the team, I believe, who handle that pressure best. And I don't think both teams have handled it particularly well so far over the last month
it's
and a
bullshit,
half.
It's bullshit, this suggestion that, like, Liverpool are big, as you said earlier, are the big bottles, and they're the big weakness and liability. Look, City will be favourites in that regard, you know, to handle the pressure. Not necessarily favourites for the league as it stands, because we are still on top.
Are Man City regressing, Paul?
I don't think we'll know that until we get back into the Champions League.
They can't get as many points as last season.
Well, yeah, then yes is the simple answer to that
So are
question,
they bottling it, Paul?
Maybe.
I don't think they are. No. But I do think that they're going to get less points than last season.
Yeah. What's going
and
to be
I don't
interesting...
think Liverpool are bottling anything either at the moment, than, you know...
If you think Liverpool are bottling it this season, you don't know what bottling it looks like. All I can say, I've seen Liverpool bottle. I've seen Liverpool bottle it more times than I care to remember. Liverpool, and maybe we will, and I'll know it when it
Liverpool
happens.
Liverpool have bottled it in the past. Loads. Liverpool bottled it against Crystal Palace in 13-14. Yeah. That's bottling it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That is bottling it. We haven't bottled it. We conceded a goal against Leicester and a goal against West Ham. It's hardly bottling it, is it? I mean, it happens in football.
I'm hoping, something you were driving towards earlier, I think that the narrative spins towards Man City now, because what they would in the weekend, Sky were billing the Everton game as, if Liverpool lose or draw on Monday night, Man City's chance to go top of the league, to go ahead of them, is the Wednesday game. And that's fine, to be expected. They'll do it because, again, Everton are fucking shit. But it'll get to the weekend, and if we're then able to level it back up again by beating Bournemouth, they play Chelsea on Sunday, and then the narrative is on, can Man City do it? Man City lost to Chelsea, you know, last time they played. Can they do this? And that will be very, very interesting to see how that happens, because we could do, you're right, I think we could maybe do just being slightly out of the spotlight for a few weeks.
All it is I think at the last sort of 2 to 3 weeks has been 90% pressure on Liverpool, 10% on Man City. And I think if they were to go level with us again, I think there'd be an even share of pressure, or a much more close to medium. Yeah. So 50-50 pressure, both teams back to win the title almost in some quarters. 60-40 maybe is probably better for us than 90-10. And that's it. You know, just somebody else talking about another side. Yeah. I kind of wouldn't mind people starting to talk about Tottenham a little bit as well. And I think they deserve to be spoken about.
I hadn't looked at the league table, but I hadn't looked below second in the league for about 6 weeks, I don't think, or at least a month. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Spurs, prior to the last round of games, Spurs were only 2 points behind Man City. I was like, oh, Christ, you know, wow, I didn't realise it was quite as close as that. And that remember,
this is without Kane, and
That was only like that was only another Man City defeat away from all of a sudden Spurs are in the ascendancy, having as you say come through their really testing injury period, etc., etc. So it is a very, very interesting one indeed, and hopefully it is one that we can all, you know, hold our heads together for. Questions then. Comrade Cowan, who's a Lewandowski 1996. Did returning from warm weather in Dubai cause all these illnesses in the squad? And if so, should the manager be accountable for this? I'm not sure that's how illnesses work. I don't think sickness bugs come from changing. Unless they've been literally gulping water out the tap, which if they have, then that's the fucking player's fault, not the management fault. Your mums always tell you when you go abroad, get bottled water. I'll do it, right?
You have to.
Yeah, you have to.
Unless take your big coat just in case it's cold. Because you know when the sun goes down, it feels dead cold pack in those warm places.
Pack the coffee mates and the cabbage fingers, yeah. It's right. Should the manager be accountable for this now? No. The problem is, again, this is another one of those things, isn't it? Now, Chris, it's a story, isn't it? And we've just been working on this story that it's good for Liverpool to have a little bit of a break. Good to have a breather, good to rest and recuperate. And now the story is, we've lost rhythm, so maybe we needed to play games because we lost rhythm. We don't fucking, no one knows. But this is one of those situations where I don't think you can account for it, because you can't account for it in work. Someone just gets one of the sickness bugs. You get ill and you don't, because you, ill sicknesses, I don't know where I'm going with this. Sicknesses can take like a week, 2 weeks, a month to gestate. So by the time you show symptoms, you actually contracted it long before, which means you've been infecting people.
There are some instances of food poisoning which can take up to 3 months to get ill. You know what I mean? So it could be absolutely anything. And think about it here. You know, there's five of us that are here every single day, and then we've got another few people who come in and help out and stuff. And if one of us goes down, generally over the next 4 weeks, we'll all go down at some point.
Yeah.
Now, there's only five of us who can possibly get ill in the first place. Now, it's always frigging Tom, by the way.
He's constantly ill.
So to be fair,
I think Lauren took us all out in December.
Yeah. 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 So, but what I'm trying to drive at is it's not just five people.
Yeah.
You know, there's 25, 30
players
coaches,
plus the same support staff and what have you, yeah.
And the chefs and everything else.
And every,
there's probably 100 people they interact with.
And every
get them ill.
Fucking fan who stops for a selfie.
Yeah.
Shakes their hand. Makes them hold the phone to take a selfie, and they've got the snot all over it and all that kind of stuff.
Even just shaking their hand. I've been in the cop. Not that many people wash their hands after they've been for a week. Like, you know what I mean? And they're outside asking for a selfie afterwards. Yeah. It's yous.
If you're outside the Hope Street, it's you probably who's infected Virgil and Fabinho and Milner.
So, and listen, we won't know whether the illness was caused by that. But I think we can guess that it was.
Why does someone
is it the manager's fault? No.
Why does someone have to be to blame for everything? Like, why is it always some like we need to fucking crucify someone at every given opportunity? Is this because everyone's gone off religion?
I don't know what
you
it
know,
is.
No, yeah, is
there's
this
no faith
because,
anymore.
Yeah, exactly. People have gone off religion. I'm not mad on religion, but there is a degree to which having a code and all that kind of thing is a very good.
I get ill and I kick off on my white blood cells for not doing that enough
job. Gobshite!
Fucking hell, lad. Replicate.
Can you handle this, lads? Can you handle this, lads? Echinacea and fucking vitamin C tablets. Like, do your job, boys. Reinforcements. Yeah. That Navi, lads. Good day, K-8. Is Twitter worth keeping with so much negativity on it? Genuine question. My first reaction once we lost that game last night was to take a screenshot of my phone with trying to uninstall Twitter and put it out on Twitter, because I felt like there was nothing. To be fair, I've had a lot of really nice comments, by and large, and there's a lot of people, I think, because it causes a reaction. I think you get a lot of negativity, and then you get the super positives react and combust in the middle, and there's just fucking
magnesium everywhere,
shite everywhere. And we've had this conversation in life in general. If I could get away with not having social accounts, particularly at the moment, particularly this week, like if we had this run and this furore off now. When we first started, in the first year of Red Men, I wouldn't have done a video after the game. There was times in that first year when I just, if we drew at Bolton or something, I'd just be like, Fucking who cares? And we had that in the first couple of years. Did we properly professionalise? And this is one of them weeks where I probably would have just swerved everything and gone on a total media blackout. Except, hi. Hello, everyone. This is what we do now. So, you know, yeah, if you've got the ability to delete Twitter and you think it'll help, do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I absolutely hate Twitter. And I hate Facebook. I like Instagram. I've talked about the reasons why before on this podcast and stuff. The highs on Twitter are really good as well, you know, and that's what you keep going back for as well, isn't it?
And all those amazing videos of people falling over on ice last week.
Oh, brilliant.
There was one, did you see the one? It was like, I think some Manx lads in Newcastle, and they just stood by a slippery spot by stairs, and they must have been there all night, and they got about 15 people stuck in it, and they were just killing themselves.
But the ones at Glasgow, have you seen the ones at Glasgow where there's like a mud puddle, and there's just loads of people stood around and a gap for people to come through, and most people are walking through and they just absolutely stack it. You'd love it. But then you get the one fella who's just running through Glasgow for no reason, like just going boom. So funny. But regardless, the highs on Twitter are really, really good at the same time, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I try not to do things that make me feel down. Yeah. That's why I don't really watch the news, you know what I mean? And that's interesting. That's why I don't really watch the news.
Yeah.
I'll read about the news that I care about, but finding out about some load of people who've just died.
Oh yeah, I've got my mum to share those stories on Facebook for me.
You're
right, Jason Munco, we've done this question.
But definitely don't tweet anything half positive or without the red tinted glasses at half time of a game of football. I think what you have to do is you have to dip your toe in the water, just feel what it's like, rather than just opening your phone up and tweeting something and hoping that
rather than tweeting what you actually think, it's best to find out if it's good to think that or not.
I must admit, I've deleted so many tweets because I just can't be arsed.
It's fucking AIDS, Twitter, mate. It's gotten worse. It never used to be like this, but now it's just the point where you cannot tweet a single thing without somebody getting affronted by it and taking umbrage with it and having an argument. You can't say something positive because there's someone who thinks it's shit, and you can't say something negative because there's people who think you're a fucking dickhead for saying that. I mean, I try not to post too many negative things in general because I think the world's got enough of that going on already, hasn't it, to be honest? Like, but you know, when you post something positive and like say I really love this film, and someone goes thought it was shit, well, that's not like having a conversation with people. Like, I liked it, but I didn't like the portrayal of this character. That's a way to have a conversation, but I hate the hard and fast, this is my opinion and it's intractable and it can't possibly be judged. And people do that. People have developed that callous in how they use social media. But there's a way that people can't come back to them. But that winds people up even more.
You know what I found about it is that I haven't got this skill set, but I've noticed that a lot of people do have it. They will phrase a tweet in a way that it's boxed off. You know what I mean? There's no right to reply on any of it. You know what I mean? And
don't at me is the fucking worst example of that.
It's just like, what are you talking about? Like, you're just being a bit of a tit, to be honest with you, and stuff. And after a while, just go through and unfollow the people that don't make your life better.
I've started to realise, because like, you get things in your time. Now it recommends, because this is the problem with it. You don't just get who you follow. You get who your other people who you follow. So you get like people come in they've done this and they like this post, or they follow this. They've got some mank accounts because someone I follow follows them. And I was like, well, I have to now go and mute this account that I've got no interest in whatsoever. But that's the problem with it all. It's the big churn and melting pot of shit that you don't want in your life being shoved into your face, because Twitter is fucking AIDS. And we need to cure AIDS.
Delete AIDS.
Let's not delete Twitter, let's delete AIDS, and then by proxy delete Twitter. Right, the Q&A is coming up on the website straight following this. There's a little bit of heaviness which I think talks about, we've got a little bit about the desperation of the fans and what having, how we're handling this stuff, a little bit of a follow on from this, but then we're doing our Premier.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
11 using one sub from each team in the Premier League. We can.
Have we got any crisps?
Have we got any crisps? Do you need some crisps?
Yeah, I'm Moorish, like.
I mean, you are very Moorish, Chris. But do you want some crisps?
Yeah, I want to eat.
You unleashed something by having the crisps for the footy yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. That
I've just gone down a pack of those Toms.
Favorite member of Friends. If you had to be a main part in a horror movie, who would you most likely survive from? That didn't make sense, but you know what I mean. How would we redesign Anfield? Who does the stinky shit in the office? Brilliant. And where people should go on the honeymoons, etc., etc. Get over to redmentv.com. Sign up. More of the daft shit covered to your heart's content. If you want to know more about us, that's the place to do it. If you don't, whatevs, man. Get on with it. Get on, crack on with the job of deleting Twitter. If you don't do it and you want more good, sensible people to follow, at Mr. Blood Red, at the Paul Machin, subscribe to this channel, subscribe to redmentv.com. Have a fabulous week. Come on, the F.